everything we shall do in 45 minutes. I'm sure we can do that.
So we are ready to call in the first candidate this morning, isn't it? And welcome Ms. Juana. Welcome. She couldn't be with us yesterday. She was ill, and her message was so ill that we only received it a few minutes ago, that she was unable to be here yesterday. There's nothing new in that. Messages also do get ill. That's why we are only getting it this morning. But welcome, everybody. We are now going to be calling Mr. Ezekiel. Yeah. Good morning. How are you? Use your microphone.
I'm well, thank you.
Are you aware that Clinton has lost?
I'm very well, sir.
Okay. What I want you to do this morning, as the first thing, as the first assignment, Ms. D. Olumisa.
Yes, sir.
You are debarred from chatting with the people on your left. You are only allowed to have a chat with the people on your right. Look at me when I'm addressing you, honorable member. Look right, not left. It's people on your right that you interact with, not people on your left. These are the honorable members of the committee that is handling the search for a new IGI. And they would like to know who you are, but please keep it brief. Only the essential things that will tell us who you are.
Good morning, honorable members, and I wish to thank you for the opportunity to present myself again to the Standing Committee. In brief, I'm Clinton Paul Davids, born and bred in the Western Cape, Cape Town. Spent most of my young life in an area called Mitchell's Plain on the Cape Flats. From basically in my early youth days, I was actively involved in student politics and the youth movement, the progressive youth movement structure. During my schooling year, I was recruited into Mkhonto weSizwe as part of an ANC reconnaissance unit. From there, I was recruited by the provincial head then of ANC intelligence in the Western Cape to head up an ANC intelligence unit. I also attended at the same time the University of Western Cape. Unfortunately, due to demands from the organization in terms of ANC intelligence, I didn't complete my degree as I had to leave the country for training in Tanzania, intelligence training. I then returned, and during those periods you would know that it was the process heading towards amalgamation of the intelligence services. I was then taken up in the services. I've been there and I left in 2007. I am single and have four dependents.
Okay, there it is. You will see that there are name plates in front of the honorable members. When you respond at a later stage, when they interact with you, you'll see who is asking what question. But I'll do the honors and just quickly introduce them to you. The first one, extreme left, is Honorable Olomisa, who's followed by Honorable Kwebekulu, Honorable Mugabe, Honorable his surname is spelled with a D at the end. But someone was suggesting that it should be DT. And if it was DT, then that would be German. Grunewald, Honorable Sebe, Honorable Sifako, Honorable Wana, Honorable Pakis, Honorable Lamini Duwazana, Honorable Skosana, and Honorable Gamede. It's possible that in the course of our interview, other members of the committee may come, but they'll be introduced to you as and when they do arrive. Right, as in the main, we want to interact with you on the basis of the relevant legislation, you know, the Oversight Act. And of course, there are other things that the members are going to be interacting with you on. Because what we are going to try and do is to find whether, in the final analysis, you will be suitable for the position of Inspector General of Intelligence. When you do give your answers, try and be precise, brief, and to the point, because we want to follow what you say in your responses. At times, when the response is long and wide, chances are we shall lose you and not understand what you were telling us. But if you are precise and, you know, just brief, we will be able to follow what you are saying. Now, I open the floor to any member who would like to be the first one this morning to interact with the candidate. We start with Honorable Grunewald.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question, sir, to you, is about Section 7.7b. Refer to the review of the intelligence and the counterintelligence activities of any service. And then the question is, what is your understanding of the review of the activities of any service and which services would be included in any service?
Thank you for the question, Honorable Grunewald. In terms of the oversight legislation, and specifically the review aspect of it, it is all the services, all the civilian intelligence services, including the departmental intelligence services, military intelligence, and crime intelligence. With specific focus on your question of the review of the counterintelligence activities, let us say that the review is not only simply about the legislative compliance of the services to counterintelligence. Having been a counterintelligence operative myself, I'm very aware that you need to understand intelligence tradecraft and tools and methods. And the review should include not only legislative and policy compliance, it should also include the means, methods, and instruments used for that, those counterintelligence responsibilities. Because in my understanding, when you do compliance, if you don't understand the business and the core business of the services, as much as you understand the legislative compliance, you need to understand where people create loopholes and where abuse can take place. So you need to understand the tradecraft of counterintelligence, and also to make sure that your target authorized under counterintelligence is indeed counterintelligence targets, that you are not creating a loophole where
an abuse where you place target authorization, that in the substantive motivation in your authorization, it is indeed not a counterintelligence target.
Honorable Scorsana, Honorable Mwabele, let me just remind you, honorable members, that any one of you, when an honorable member has asked a question and a response has been given, even if that honorable member has no follow-up question, anyone among you who would have a follow-up question, raise your hand and indicate to me that it is a follow-up question. Honorable Wana.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to everybody. My question is as follows. The Inspector General is supposed to be accountable to the committee and its overall functions. My question is, how do you understand the accountability of the IGI to the committee from the readings of the word accountability to the committee and the overall function of your office? Does the IG report of administration functions in order to understand the legislative practices? How do you understand the function specifically of the IG in the office? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Wana. The intelligence oversight, Redwood sections of the Constitution, section of Chapter 11 to 10, subsection 210, is very clear that members of this Honorable Committee have a legislative responsibility for oversight of the intelligence services. The IG post has specifically been created to allow an independent, impartial, an objective person to be appointed as the Inspector General. The first responsibility in terms of the oversight is to the Joint Standing Committee of Intelligence. And when I say the first responsibility to that is, the act is clear, but I think you need to have a person that is transparent and that, as part of the Intelligence Oversight Act, engages in constructive engagement. And part of my duties, if successful, should be to report, besides my annual report and the certifications of the services to this committee, is also to allow for complete transparency and constructive engagement, and also to ensure that there is regular reporting. So what I'm saying is that outside even the annual report that is prescribed in the Act, I must be able, when there's a situation that arises of importance and national security, I must be able to take this committee into my confidence and be able to call for a briefing to this committee. Because any action that is immediate and poses any security risk to our country should be reported on as a matter of fact with urgency. So I'm saying that as much as the Act allows for prescribed reporting annually, I have an obligation and a duty to report to this committee on anything that may pose a threat to our national security as a matter of urgency and not delay that process.
Okay, follow up.
My follow-up question, Chairperson, is as follows. According to this explanation you are explaining, this office is very important. Where will be your honesty or your reality lies within the international superpower perspective and the developing countries? Thank you.
Honorable Wana, may I ask for further but clarification on the question?
Through you, Chairperson, is he looking for me to repeat my question? Yes. Mr. David, what I'm saying, as your explanation are explaining to us, my question is, according to your period, your regime within the office, will be your honesty and loyalty interested in the superpower and the practice, or will be your interest and integrity have an interest of developing countries, because South Africa is a developing country.
Honorable Wana, thank you very much. Let I explain, and I hope I'm going to answer you directly. First of all, my first loyalty is to my country, South Africa. Let there be no any doubts about that. I'm a son from this country. I have experienced enough in my life to understand that great sacrifices have been made for this country. And it is my duty that if you should feel that I am the correct person for this post, that not only would it be one of the greatest honors to serve my country in such office, but I have personally made sacrifices. I know of many who have done sacrifices for this country. And I'm talking from all areas of life and all places. But I'm saying, and I give you the commitment today, that if you ever want someone who is going to have complete transparency and accountability and integrity in my decisions and reporting and my actions, then I think that person is sitting here in front of you. I know what I've personally been through, and I know through all my training, one of the first things that you do in training, if you are trained properly as an intelligence officer, you are told, know your constitution, know your Bill of Rights, know your legislation, because your intelligence officers is your guardians of your constitution. And I'm saying that if you underwent correct intelligence training, you would know that you are impartial and you report honestly and truthfully. So, in conclusion, let I tell you that I love my country very, very much. And my loyalty is here, and I have no two doubts about it.
Honorable Mwabe, to be followed by Honorable Skhosana and Honorable Lamini Dubazana, Honorable Gamede.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to members. Greetings to you, Mr. Day. I want you to tell us more on your management experience. You know the office of the IG also needs a senior management skill. So I want to know your experience on senior level of the management. But also, please also explain and clarify what is in page one of your motivational letter, or it's a CV, where you said in 1995 to 2007, you worked as a divisional head of special events in the state security. And according to what is there, one of the things that you did there was the preparations of President Mandela's funeral. And as far as I'm concerned, President Mandela was still alive in 2007. I need clarity on that. I'm lost on what is being said. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Sir. Let us say that I think I've been personally very blessed to have been in management and leadership positions most of my life. I want to go back in terms of the chronological order of my CV, sir, if I may. From being a member of Mkhonto we Sizwe, as a young person, I've been in a senior position in the unit. And I've had to manage people in that unit. In the time period 91 to 95, 94, before amalgamation, the ANC intelligence unit, I was the youngest member, the commander of the unit, but the youngest member. And I had to give not only operational oversight management and leadership, but I had to develop the skills and sound skills of being rational and being fair and being an objective in my management and to lead by example. That includes being a role model to other members in the unit. And it included different levels. It did not only included the operational part of managing and leading and planning and preparation. It also included, for example, what we call now employee assistance programs. In that time, you would say the emotional support of people. And I've given that through my leadership, through my motivation, through my innovation, and through my creativity.
If you look at my CV in the period 1995 to 2007, the one thing that I am blessed with, and I feel very fortunate about, sir, is that I didn't jump promotion levels. You would very clearly see that in my time at State Security Agency. I served in different line functional units, from surveillance team leader to a covert agent handler, and I rose through the ranks organically. I didn't skip phases of development. And wherever I've been placed in those responsibilities, I've been placed in a management and leadership capacity. And I've always had to lead and guide with integrity. If you look at the divisional heads positions within the State Security Agency, that is where you basically head up components, be it analysis, you have senior analysts, you have junior analysts within your unit, you manage the day-to-day business of that unit. You are responsible as the accounting officer of that unit for any activity and actions that happen there. I want to speak specifically to further on my management and leadership style in the context of the Office of the IG. If I should be appointed, sir, my understanding of the Office of the IG is that you would need someone to be appointed that's going to hit the ground running. And when I say hit the ground running in terms of management and leadership, you know you need to have someone that understands intelligence first and foremost, that has competent and capable management and leadership style. Remember, there is currently staff within the Office of the IG. And yes, some of them have applied, and it's rightfully so, they're right to apply. However, I feel that with my management and leadership competence and capacity, that I will reinvigorate that office. I would be respected and hopefully appreciated by members serving currently there, because my comparative advantage is that I'm not entering that office if I should be appointed being confused. I know the work of the intelligence services, I know the environment, I know the terrain. So what the Office of the IG needs is a manager, a leader, that one is going to lead with example, that's going to be able to ensure that there's work being done, that there's compliance, that there's capacity being developed there, and that the office itself is strengthened. So I'm confident, sir, that I have the required skills and knowledge to be a very competent manager and leader. On the issue of 2007, former President Mandela was still alive. I was the first project manager, that's correct. Now, part of the intelligence services duties for special events, you would know special events within state security, they do all the international or major events that there is real or potential security threats. Right? Part of special events in the context of the passing of President Mandela was exactly in terms of the statement that former President Mandela was and the impact it could potentially have on the country. So part of Operational Graceful was that we designed scenarios that if former President Mandela should pass, what would be the impact on the security, what would be the impact on our borders, what would be the impact on our politics. And I think that is the work of the intelligence services. Thank you.
Let me just check something with you. I'm going to come to you for your follow-up question. Let me check something with you. Are you then telling this committee that you were leading a unit that was discussing what you are saying about the possibility of the President Mandela at the time?
And that is correct, sir.
I'm going to come back to this. Let me hear your follow-up.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. But it's still on the issue of the preparations of the President's funeral. I am not convinced that it was supposed to reflect on his CV. It's somehow misleading. It's not that much clear. But also, on your management experience or level as you are talking, what worries me is the time you spend in each position. It's only this divisional head of special events where you spent quite some time from 1995 to 2007. But after that, you have been jumping in each position. In 2007 to 2010, you were the managing director in Pinpoint Security. But in 2011 to 2012, you worked as a researcher in the Ministry of Community Safety in the Western Cape. In 2012-2015, you worked as a project manager in the Ministry of Social Development. In 2015 to this date, you are a managing director in ClearSight Consulting Risk Management Company. But my worry is the time frame you spend in each position of management. Is that true?
Yeah. So let I say to you, the period 1995 to 2007 covers the full period of my time at the State Security Agency in those different positions. Let us say that if you look that my background is intelligence, okay. So for each of those positions that I entered within the State Security Services, I applied for. There was an interview process I applied for. And what I'm saying is that I don't think that I've let's put it this way, Honorable Sir. I'm not a fickle person. Did I tell you this? When I apply, not a fickle person in the sense of jumping around, Honorable Sir. When I applied for those posts, for example, if you look at the covert agent handler position from the surveillance team leader, I thought in my mind it is a natural progression from surveillance team leader who has been surveilling certain targets and then moved into that position, because I felt I had the competence to be a competent agent handler. So I want to assure yourself, Honorable Sir, and the panel, I'm not fickle. I think that I applied naturally, and I got selected out of the interview process.
There's still a follow-up relating to preparations for Nelson Mandela. Are you also going to be, all of you, follow-up relating to the Mandela preparations? No, let's deal with the Mandela thing. Are you there? Okay.
Maybe it was on later years, but I find it very difficult that you could convince us that in 2007 you could even have such a mock exercise. Did you, in that particular year, actually have certain information that would suggest that you could stage such an exercise?
Let us say, sir, and I want to clarify two parts to the issue of Operation Graceful. As the previous honourable member said, maybe it was inappropriate to put it there, but I want to explain why it is there in my CV. Okay. The one is, for me, it was a great honour to be part of such a project. Okay. But whether it happened, it was there, it was discussed, yes sir. It was there, it was discussed. There was that planning. And I'm basically confirming it. I wouldn't misrepresent anything of that sort in my CV. I know it may now come across as insensitive and so forth. And I want to apologize on behalf of all the members of SSA who was involved in that project, because it may sound insensitive now. But I assure you, Honorable Member, that I didn't put it there to misrepresent anything. I personally placed it there because for me it was a great honor.
You have indicated that you led that project, is that right? Who put the team together?
The operational instruction was approved by the then Director General.
Who was the then Director General?
If memory serves me correct, I think it was the current Director General now. Sorry, not the current. The current one was DDG. It was...
Okay. How many of you were in that unit?
It consisted of special events in which I served. It consisted of operational planning analysis. It consisted of the presidency. At that time, in the presidency, it was Mr. Fowler, who was until recently the municipal manager of Johannesburg, and it included defense.
And you were the head of that entire unit?
For the SSA component, yes.
Not of the whole unit?
No, the project manager was in SSA, State Security Agency. Not the entire unit in terms of...
When these people came together, surely there was a convener, a chairperson of that entire unit. Did you lead that entire unit, which was comprised of all the people that you are talking about?
No, it was led by the head of special events.
Who was the head of special events?
Mr. Masango.
You see, I'm asking these questions because indeed, when you say to these members that you were in charge of this project, the impression you are therefore conveying is that the project was not just one arm of this. You are now admitting that it was a number of people who had come together for the project, and sitting at the head of this was not you. Am I correct?
Of the bigger project, no. Of the state security, internally state security, yes.
Maybe I'm speaking past you. You see, look at this team here. I'm chairing this team. And this team is composed from people with different backgrounds and coming from different units, so to speak. But I'm chairing it, right? Now, if during this period you talk about this team, you would say, I chaired it. You would not take one member, Honorable Gamede, because he comes from a particular section that therefore he is in charge of this unit. Because in the final analysis, the person who's in charge is the coordinator, right on top, and you say it was not you, it was Masang, isn't it?
That's correct, sir, if that's your understanding.
No, sorry, your understanding as well.
Well, then I concur with you, sir.
Secondly, in 2007, I had a particular experience, and sitting where I was in 2007, I can confirm that already there were discussions relating to the possible passing away of President Nelson Mandela. Would you agree with me if I say those discussions were happening right on top with firstly Madiba himself involved at one level, and secondly, the leadership of the country. Would you agree with me if I told you that?
Well, sir, I wasn't privy to that level of discussion. So what you are saying, I accept as correct. What I'm saying is that I wasn't part of any of that level of discussion. I was even aware that when this project was discussed within SSA, that that level of discussion was taking place.
And therefore, if there was a discussion which was happening right there, is it correct then, looking at discussions which were happening at a very low level, that when you talk about that project, you project yourselves as having been right on top of the coordinator, which is how, when you put it on your CV as you have done, which is what in a sense you are saying.
No, sir, I understand what you're saying, and I'm not disputing anything. What I want to say to the committee, there has been no intent of any misrepresentation when I placed it there. I can honestly, sincerely tell you, because the part that the Honorable Chairperson says there was those macro discussions, I am saying I was unaware of that level of discussion even taking place. When I placed it there in my CV, and I hope that this Honorable Committee will understand and appreciate what I'm saying, that I'm saying Operation Grateful, first project manager, as in within the SSA, not projecting or pretending anything else. So I want to be honest with you. I will never misrepresent myself. And besides that, one of the principles of intelligence is compartmentalization. At my level, I could never have expected to know anything or everything. So please, except if that it is taken that I'm misrepresenting myself, I want to make it very clear. I am not doing that, and that was not the intent.
We are going to step off this particular thing. Are you well, there's an insistence, Honorable Olumisa, Honorable Dlamini Zubazana, Honorable Skhosana, Honorable Stebe. I'm hoping that we are dealing with this first. It's all these arise from this interaction, right? Okay.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I think I need to help this committee. This gentleman says he was the head of this operation within his department. Fortunately, I sat in that committee from day one. The period he is mentioning, as you have correctly put it, already there was a plan. It took us from the December, from the date of the funeral. It took us about 8 years for that plan. So he was not at that level, but his department was represented. So there's nothing wrong, therefore, if he claims that within the department he works, he was in charge of that, but not at the higher level. Am I interpreting you correctly?
Sir, you are interpreting me correctly.
Yes.
As I'm saying, I'm not trying to misrepresent anything. You are quite correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Chairperson, thank you, Mr. Davis. The Honorable Member Mwabe, who asked you about the management skills, I think you did not actually answer the question. The reason being, in your motivational letter, you claim that you have got an extensive operational experience. That's management. Instead of giving us that experience you were asking for, you actually gave us the experience for tomorrow, that should you be appointed, this is what you're going to do. Can you then give back that to us.
And going back to the very same matter under your divisional head, special events, there's something I would like to ask, because it links the questioning of the information. When you talk about, as a member of Umkhonto we Sizwe, 1987 to 1991, and as a member of Umkhonto we Sizwe, me, before, in my previous life, 1987 to 1991.
Honorable member.
I'm sorry.
That is not a follow-up at all.
Oh, okay.
That's a new question.
Oh, okay.
Can you reserve it so that we deal with those who have raised their hands as a follow-up? Next one is Honorable Skosana.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Mr. Davis. Honorable Chairperson, for almost more than 30 minutes, it looks like we're debating about a project that a gentleman has put before us here as a reference for his operation. And Honorable Olomisa has put it very clear to categorize the section where the gentleman was serving and the other section where he cannot fit in that particular section. But I should think, Chair, we need a way to step off of this item of a project. And I should think you are relevant to assist us to wrap up nicely, then we go forward with other matters. I'm just appealing to you.
Except that I had said we are stepping off this particular matter, and you, that I have recognized, then put up your hands as a follow-up to this matter. I had said we step off it. Can we agree that we have stepped off this matter? Yeah. No, there are other hands before you. Honorable Olomisa, the point of this matter, which we were talking about, is that when you put in a CV and say you were part of a particular project, you were leading it, you take that entire project into consideration. That's all that we were talking about. But we stepped off it because he has explained that he only was talking to a small aspect of the project. So we have stepped off that matter. Now, let's go back to our list of the original hands. It was then you, Skosana, Gamede, and Mwane has already spoken, and Stebe.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Mr. Davis, in your CV, you indicated that a Bachelor of Arts from the UWC second year. Now, I would like to know, when did you start this degree, undergraduate degree? If you're saying second year, what degree do you mean? That is the first thing. And then secondly, I was also looking at your sequence of movement within the very same SSSA, and I'm trying to align it with the skill of jumping around within the same department but shifting divisions. And I'm asking myself as to what is it that was making your ministry or your DG to move you around so much if you're still within the... Because now, if you're looking at it, it's not about the skill, that building up on the skill, on a particular skill. At some stage, you become a researcher. At some stage, you become a projector. At some stage, you become a managing director. So it's a bit confusing. But however, though, then I'd like to go to my very first question about Umkhonto we Sizwe in Western Cape in 1987 to 1991. Were you really a member of Mkhonto weSizwe during that time, 1987 to 1991? Or did we call the name Mkhonto weSizwe, or do we call it as other name?
I hope you are not suggesting that between 87 and 91 there were no people who became members of Mkhonto weSizwe. Can you clarify to him so that he can respond?
I am. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, for the clarity. The reason why I'm asking that question that way is because Mkhonto weSizwe was burned, was still outside, was in exile. The members who were here were really not using the name Mkhonto weSizwe, 1987. There would be anything but not Mkhonto weSizwe. Now, the reason I'm asking is the way using of the word Mkhonto weSizwe during that time, 1987, were we using it in the Republic of South Africa, that I am a member of Mkhonto weSizwe and I'm in Western Cape and I'm doing operations?
Do you have all the questions that she asked?
Yes.
Can you respond?
Yes, I do, Chairperson. Ma'am, first of all, let us say that indeed I was a member of Mkhonto weSizwe in that period. My DMOB certificate and my inclusion in the CPR list confirms that. So I want to say that to you. That yes, indeed, I have a DMOB certificate to prove that, and my name is indeed included in the CPR registered list. I'm also registered on the database of military veterans in Pretoria, so yes, indeed I was.
Can you remind him of the other question?
I am not denying the fact that you were a member of Mkhonto weSizwe. I am saying it's 1987. You are in the Western Cape. And you are in Mkhonto weSizwe. In the Republic of South Africa.
That's correct, yes. In the Western Cape.
You are in Mkhonto weSizwe.
I'm a member of MK in the Western Cape, yes.
Now, I am asking you whether during 1987, Mkhonto weSizwe in the Republic of South Africa was operating on a surface space. Was it operating on a surface space for you to call yourself Mkhonto weSizwe?
Wait a bit. So that we do not come back to this question. I arrived here in the Western Cape in 1988. And I was a commander of Mkhonto weSizwe. From 1988, I started recruiting people into my unit, and therefore they became members of Mkhonto weSizwe underground here. This is what he's trying to indicate. Just that, so that it does not arise again. But answer the other, can you remind him of
question? No, thank you, Mr. Chairperson. No, the reason why I keep on saying 1987, it's because I know that those activities, they started in 1988, like you are saying, Chairperson. And he says from 1987. Now, that if it's 1987...
No, Honorable Member, please. This is, you know, underground work has been ongoing for a very long period of time. Not everybody who was in MK left the country. There are many who were inside the country and who did work inside the country. Let us not continue to follow that line of interrogation. But remind him of the questions you had asked, apart from this MK one.
Another question I asked was to give us your previous experience, managerial experience. Because as you were answering Mr. Mwabe, you more focused on the should you be appointed as an IG, this is what you do. So what is your previous managerial experience that you are bringing on that is going to add value to this office? I thank you, Chair.
Ma'am, thank you for the question. As I said, it was in the cover letter of my CV that I honestly believe that I have the competence and the knowledge and skills for a manager and leader. but to answer you directly, that I was saying earlier that I've been blessed since an early age to have always been in management and leadership positions. And what I'm saying to you and this committee is that, one, I have good social interaction skills, I've got good planning skills, I've got good creativity and innovation, I'm an inspiring leader, I can plan, I can analyze, I can interpret, and I'm saying that all of those sets of strengths I'm bringing to this forum today. And I believe that having had different experiences and different areas of management and leadership skills in the service and outside, I believe that I have the competency. So what I'm indeed saying, ma'am, is that yes, I would be able to lead teams. I would be able to lead teams within a stewardship agreement. Also, I would be able to lead and manage teams by agreement. But I believe that I have the confidence, I have the visionary skills, I have the creativity, and the personal skills. I think I'm a very in tune person with people I work with. In a sense that, you know, I hear both sides of the story, and after reflecting and after crystallizing the issue, I make a decision. I am not a leader that rushes into situations. I don't get to Manandi Beach and the water looks nice and I just rush in. I look at where is the rip current, I look at is high tide or low tide, so that is my management style. I go into a situation reflecting and thinking about my actions. I don't rush into it. I don't make pronouncements. I don't get excited. My emotional intelligence, I think, is intact. And my style of management would be to get people to buy into the vision and mission of whatever area I'm operating in.
Just to remind the honorable member, Honorable Mwabe's question did not relate to a doubt about his managerial skills. It had to do with the fact that, looking at his profile, he seemed to be jumping from job to job. That was the thing. But in his profile, he has indicated that he has been a manager for most of his latter years. He's been a head of division, he's been a manager, and even to date, he is a manager, managing director of Clearsight Consulting. So not unless we have difficulties about what he has said about his managerial skills, as indicated in this. Can we go to some other questions, please? But after her is you. Come again? Or the degree, yeah.
Yes, I think I also answered that earlier on. I said when the Honorable Chairperson asked me to give a brief but short introduction to myself, I spoke about where I grew up. I said I then was recruited into MK and so forth, and I also said I then, at that same time, I was at the University of Western Cape. Unfortunately, I said I left because I went for intelligence training abroad. So what has happened, I never finished that degree.
Kosana?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. David, thanks for your input and the responses that you've given. I just want to check with you. For instance, the office has been there without an IG for a year. Now, let's suppose that you are appointed as an IG. What strategic plan will you apply to change the situation in the office? That's question number one. Question number two. Section 7, subsection 7C refers to the performance of all functions designated to you by the President or any minister for a savior. What is your understanding of the type of functions that may lawfully be designated to you by the president or the minister of any savior? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Skosana. What I want to say is, I think early on also, because I want to answer you as directly as possible, sir. The one question that was raised to me early on was my responsibilities to this committee. So I don't want to touch again on the Joint Standing Committee. Your answer is very direct. It speaks, which is in the oversight, the president, the ministers of the designated services. Now I want to say again, part of the duties of oversight says, there's one part that I like a lot. It says partnerships and constructive engagement. Constructive engagement in terms of my mandate with the presidency, with the ministers, to come to what is lawful or not lawful. Remember, the Inspector General is supposed to be impartial and independent. However, the president may call and say, Mr. Davis, you know, I received a call, or I received a report about this particular service that is worrying me. 1, 2, 3 is the allegations. If it fits within your mandate of oversight, review, and assurance of the services, can you please investigate for me? Then I think that would be lawful. If the minister says to me, Mr. Davis, I think you are best suited to deal with this in terms of your oversight mandate. I've received a report that somewhere abroad, one of our officers stationed abroad has been involved in 1, 2, 3 kinds of activities. There's potential harm or damage, but there's also an indication that there may be contraventions of certain laws and regulations here in South Africa. Then I think it is lawful, and I have to report. The one thing that must be very clear is that the Inspector General, and I want to emphasize this, is impartial and independent, and reports objectively. Now, I am not, if I should be appointed, going to play to a gallery. I'm not going to say things to please anyone. My mandate is constitutionally enshrined, and this committee and parliament and the people of this country would expect and keep me to the highest office to say, we expect you to report honorably without fear or favor. But what I'm saying is, the oversight is very clear. The president, the ministers have a right to give me or request assistance with a particular matter if it falls within my mandate, and I have to report. But the most important thing is, my reports must be as objective as possible. I want to further add, you know, sir, part of preparing for this interview, I looked at international best practice models. And the one thing, there's been a lot of exciting developments within New Zealand in terms of their Inspector General. And there's been, for me, which I found very interesting, there's been things about, on the website, there is a work plan, there's all of those transparencies, there's the publication of reports, of course, within the parameters of security and secrecy. But what I'm saying is, I would be very transparent. If I look at the website of the current Inspector General's office, you know, sir, it needs to be invigorated. It needs to be more citizen-friendly, because you want people to report if they have something to report, but you want participation. You don't want a stale, static office. And I think your question is in terms of what would I do if I should be appointed. I want to say, and I said it earlier on, the difference between me and what is my competitive advantage above all the other candidates, I think, with all due respect to them, I know the intelligence environment. And what I'm saying is that part with my management and leadership skills, I'm one going to, if I should be appointed, my first call of duty, and I hope you would afford me that, is that you will summon me to this forum and you will tell me and you will give me lawful and legal instructions to say, Mr. David, you've been appointed. However, for so long this committee has been worried about 1, 2, 3, 4. And we're giving you this mandate to say, within this timeline, we want a report from you. That would be fair and reasonable. 2, I would capacitate that office
with immediate effect, which I want this committee to give me a mandate to say, Mr. Davis, this is what we expect from you. In your first year, we don't want fanfare, we don't want noises, we want you to comply with this instruction we're giving you. And we want you to report back. But it's to capacitate us, to also review the backlog of cases that is there, and to also start with the process of constructive engagement. There's both civil society, there's both this committee, there's both the president and the minister, and the ministers I'll have to engage with. And this is why I'm saying I'm going to hit the ground running. There's been too much of a backlog that if it is not dealt with, we are faced with serious threats and undermining of the office. So the most important thing is also, because I have practical experience of the intelligence environment, I'll be hitting that office being able to give proper oversight to investigations and other issues of review assurance and compliance.
Kameda.
Once more, good morning, in your letter supporting your application, paragraph 3, second line, you state very strongly that should you be appointed, you want to bring stability to this office. Why is people stability? Is there no stability now? That's the first question. And then last paragraph, you say something that needs further explanation. You say, and I quote, it is also my belief that the next intelligence inspector general should understand and know how unauthorized and severe breaches in conduct by intelligence officers could be concealed and hidden in legitimate mandates and operations. Now, taking into account that the IG is there to monitor the activities of the services, why would then the IG be party to concealing some information, because this is what's supposed to come up to the IG so that the IG can report certain activities. Still, you didn't answer the question from Honorable Tubaga Benjamin about the, when did you start DPA? The year, you talk about it, but the year is not there. And lastly, to the assistant in your city, if you write the year, you know, you started as a surveillance team leader, we don't know which year. Then the next is count our experience, we don't know which year, just cut them all together. This is then we're able to see how we have progressed in the year. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Honorable sir. A few questions you asked, but I would hope I would cover all of them. Your question is, in terms of the instability in the office, current office of the IG, do you think that is the case? Let I say to you that where any ship is leaderless for so long, there is relative instability. The point is that there is a constitutional mandate for that office to be functioning properly and with integrity. If there's no leader, it is a serious problem. Because you see what happens is that your personnel that's there, no one of them can make any strategic decision because they're not appointed into the post. And what you need someone who can give strategic direction, leadership and management as soon as possible. So, yes, I would like, if afforded the opportunity, to bring for the office of the IG to operate and function properly. On the question in terms of my CV, where I say that I have an understanding of the operations of the intelligence environment, and I would be able to detect or foresee where possible breaches can occur, right? My paraphrasing your word. What I'm saying is that the office of the IG receives complaints, and there can be a multiplicity of complaints. It can be, for example, a spouse saying, my husband works for so-and-so, and he's got surveillance equipment I know at home, and he's using it to monitor me if I'm busy with XYZ. It could also be, and this is what I'm bringing to this committee, having worked in the intelligence environment, I want to cite examples without breaching any security policy. You see, if you recruit, for example, sources, you could recruit sources to enrich family members and friends. Coming from the environment, I would be able, if I receive such a complaint, I would be able to say to my investigators, go look there, request that information. I can also know, especially when it comes to special operations or covert operations, that, for example, someone can decide, besides breaching the PFMA and other judiciary and judiciary legislation, someone can say, hey man, I'm going to set up this covert unit as a front for this, but in actual fact it becomes a business enterprise to enrich someone. And I'm saying that having the understanding of how you can register a source under a false flag or under a different name, while it is in actual fact that source, I would be confident to say that I would be nowhere to go look for the information. And that is what I'm saying I'm bringing. I'm not saying I'm going to go out and investigate for the sake of investigating. It doesn't work like that. You investigate on a mandate, and you investigate on a registered complaint from whatever quarters. So what I'm saying is that there will be various complaints that would be registered, but if I look at it, I would be able to say to my team and say, you know, I can say to my legal counsel, you know what, you understand the law. You can interpret the law, but I'm telling you now from an intelligence perspective, look at that if there's compliance. I can say to an investigator, go there, ask for this information. I can say no, but this authorization doesn't look correct, you know, because the information contained in here is not justifiable to have authorized the intercept. So what I'm saying is I would be bringing my collective years of experience and knowledge of how targets are authorized and surveillance targets selected and those kinds of things. I would bring that strength to the Office of the Inspector General. Your last question, sir, in terms of the year of the BA, 1991, I first started.
There's an aspect that you have not covered, I'm sure, which you can do quite quickly. Part of his question is that you have not delineated the years relating to the positions that you have held. Was that an oversight?
No, it wasn't an oversight, sir. I did it that way because I wanted to speak to my full period at SSA. So no, it was not an oversight. I did it that way because I was hoping that I would be afforded that question to explain things.
I'm sure you do realize why you are asking the question. You wanted to check, I'll just take yes, I'll plug them out of my head. In 2002, how many times were you promoted? You won't know that unless someone says, in this year, in that year, in the following year. Otherwise, when you say from, let's say, 2005 to 2010, hours in these divergent areas, that is what he wants to know.
Before he answers, in the 5 years that you brought, 1991 is the year that you did your retreat. Can you give us the correct information?
Sorry, 1992, sir. Okay, may I answer your question, Chair? What happened when, remember, before we amalgamated into the current service now, right? There was the MK period, there was the ANC intelligence period. We amalgamated. Part of the amalgamation process was that MK people from the different intelligence services were placed. There was committees that spoke about where we want to place our people and so forth. Right? It was decided on that senior committee, which included people like Gibson and Jenja and those others that was there. Again, I wasn't privy to it, but I got the instruction to say, Clinton Davis, you are being deployed to SSA as a surveillance team leader. I was in there, sir, for approximately 2.5 years. I then applied for the post of covert agent handler, which I then successfully received. Okay. I was then there for about another 3 years, and then what happened in that particular, whilst I was in that unit, the covert unit, that unit, the members were integrated into other units. I then ended up being placed as a county intelligence investigator. Okay. And then, whilst being a county intelligence investigator, I applied for the position of divisional head analysis, which I then got in Limpopo. I was there for also about 3 years. I was then redeployed back to Pretoria for the new unit that was created, and then the divisional head foreign intelligence training, I was seconded there as a divisional head to Sanai in Mafikeng.
Stebe, followed by Olumisa, and then Wana.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Davis, you just made a comment just now. You said there's serious threat and undermining of the IG's office. Now, the serious threat you partially dealt with in the previous reply. What did you mean in the undermining of the IG's office? I just want to understand that. But the question that I want to ask you is, what is your understanding of public interest and national interest?
On the question of the threat and undermining of the office, what I'm saying, Honorable Stibber, when I say undermining of the IG's office, is that you see, it's not been functioning optimally. And there's constitutional and legislative mandate for that office to exist and for that office to be functional. So when I'm saying that office could be undermined, I'm saying simply that in the absence of a functional office and without that office fulfilling its constitutional mandate, many things happen without the proper oversight. And I'm saying that you see, someone can say, there's no one there, we don't need it, we don't listen to that office. People can use whatever kinds of arguments, but I'm saying in principle, Honorable Stipper, the mere fact that the office is not functioning optimally, it's a serious concern.
Okay, thank you.
On the question of national interest, public interest, sir, what I want to say is that national interest is determined by a range of things, right? Because it's the broad overarching concept of what is and how we in South Africa define national interest. Our national interest could include environmental factors, it could include water shortage, it could include the integrity of our borders, it could include our foreign policy. That's the national interest. It is there in terms of our policy, and policy adopted by the constitutional mandated arms of government, which is the legislature, and elected officials. They set the agenda for national interest. Public interest could be varied. You could have different groupings, you could be just have different civil society movements that has a particular interest in a particular matter. Okay. So it could be varied, but what is clear is that our national interest is set by this committee and its colleagues in the National Assembly and the Council of Provinces, as mandated by the people through free and fair elections. And the public interest is that the public could have a varied amount of interest. For some, it would be currently about fracking. That would be a public interest matter. For some, it could be about our space technology and the space agency that we have. For some, it could be about transparency, accountability. It could be about the substantive and dimensions of democracy. So what I'm saying is that it is varied. Different public interest groups exist, and they've got the constitutional mandate to exist and a right to exist, and therefore there is that difference.
Do you have a follow-up? I see your mic on.
Sorry.
Olomisa?
Thanks, Chairperson. Mr. Davids, let me address you as a former member of Mkhonto weSizwe. In the recent past, we have noticed people calling themselves MKVets. Some of them are serving in the current cabinet. But what worries me is the language they use, threatening language, threatening war. Question, can you assure this committee that you are not a member of the said association? If you are, do you support their threats?
Thank you, Honorable Onamisa. I want to start by saying to you, and as I made a commitment to this committee, that I say to you, I said earlier on, Honorable Onamisa, that if you were properly trained as an intelligence officer, like myself, one of the first things that you are trained with is the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and all of those things, because you cannot be an intelligence officer if you don't understand the Constitution and Bill of Rights. You know, in the ANC, if I may answer you, because I appreciate the question, part of how people, in my knowledge, were recruited was because they have proven and tested records in organizations, they have credibility. And the one thing that engaged there was political education. You were taught about state of the nation, you were taught about dialectics, you were taught about balance of forces, you were taught about military combat work and all these things to prepare you to be a soldier that can think, not someone who runs around crazy. Now I want to say to you, sir, by default, as a past member of MK, I would be a member of the MKV. But let I say to you, very directly and very honestly, you see, part of my upbringing has been proper political schooling, and I've got many comrades to thank for it, wherever they are. But the most important thing is, whether you were soldier, now in government or MKB, you don't make political utterances, and you don't threaten them, whatever, war or whatever. Then I say to you that I would like to think I'm a proud MKV member, but I will never support any unconstitutional change, and I will never support any utterances that is not within the ambit of the person who's supposed to say it. I will not. And I say I love my country dearly. I'm not prepared to compromise myself for any position in government, even for this office. I will not, because I've got the duty of care to my own children. I've got the duty of care of people who trusted me all these years and who gave me opportunity to do honorable things. And I will serve honorably if I am elected.
You believe you've been answered?
Yes,
thank you. Wana is the last question.
Mr. Davis, in your credentials, you have managed to be given accreditation in terms of foreign collection of intelligence and external counterintelligence. My question is, how would you analyze the foreign intelligence warfare compared to your developing country, South Africa?
Thank you, Honorable Wana. Let us say that, you know, foreign intelligence collection, as much as collection, you know, you can't compromise one or the other. But let I tell you, if you are clear on your national interest, then your national interest is transmitted and promoted in two ways. It is promoted and defended through your diplomatic missions and organizations abroad, and through your intelligence. Remember, intelligence officers abroad have a very, 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 very important mandate. As much as foreign governments try to influence our government and our institution through foreign policy and maneuvers, we do the same. But the most important thing is that if you look at South Africa from a foreign intelligence responsibility, let I tell you, as a trained intelligence officer, the Western services in particular are very active in South Africa. You know, it is nice to be here because there's so much things happening day to day that they are basking in the intelligence that's becoming available. But also they use South Africa strategically, geopolitically, to springboard from here into Southern Africa and the rest of Africa. South Africa provides many advantages to foreign services, you know, through the diplomatic missions and through the intelligence. From the office or let us put it this way, as an intelligence officer, foreign intelligence and counterintelligence is very important, man. And we need to be clear that we are fulfilling our mandate. We are fulfilling it correctly. And most importantly, ma'am, let I emphasize this, that we place the correct people in intelligence capacities abroad. You need skilled, seasoned, trained intelligence officers abroad. You don't know people, you don't need people who are not properly equipped for the task. It is a heavy burden on the person who serves abroad. You serve alone, you serve sometimes in anonymity, sometimes declared, but you have a very, very important role. Because what we cannot achieve in our national interest via official diplomatic protocol, we need to do through intelligence. But we must also be aware that foreign intelligence services is active, and that's a fact. I mean, we can't deny it. Otherwise, they're not doing their work.
Well, that was the last question. We have to forge ahead, the honorable members. Is there anything that you believe would be your final statement to the committee that you want to make?
Again, I just want to say in closing remarks that I want to thank the committee for the opportunity to present myself again. And I want to give this committee the assurance that if I should be the successful candidate, that I would serve my country, its people, and this committee honorably. I think there's a saying that people say that many are called, few are chosen. And I think it's very true that whoever gets nominated for this position should be the right person. So I wish you well in your deliberations, and I wish all the other candidates well. And may the right person be appointed. Thank you.
Well, on behalf of the committee, thank you very much for availing yourself. Thank you.
You see, I'm sure those that are coming may also want to do what we have done. They take a long time to get to the point. Now, I am loath, for the sake of transparency, to simply stop a person and say, no, you are long-winded.
we want you to answer the following. I don't want to do that. So let's see how it turns out. In the beginning, you have heard, I tried to indicate to them that we don't want them to be long-winded. So in order for us to follow what they are saying, but they are taking such a long time to explain even very, very simple things where they could easily say, yes, I'm not part of that, and that's it. For instance, the question that the Honorable Mr. was raising. I mean, he could simply say that I am not a member of the current association, and I do not agree with the bellicosity that they have displayed in raising some of their issues. And that would have answered, Honorable Olomisa. But as I say, I am not keen to stop them dead when they go off the rails, so to speak. You had your hand up, Honorable Mwale.
Thank you, Chair. I want to make a request, if I'm not out of order, that if we see as the panel that we are not getting what we want from the candidate, can we quickly release? Rather than asking many questions, try to get something that is very difficult to get. It's like we are chasing the wind.
I don't understand what you are asking me to do. Let's hear Honorable Smith.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I understand what Mr. Mkwabi is saying, but unfortunately this is part of the process. You need to give someone the opportunity to give his view. If you don't like it, well, you can form your opinion afterwards. But it's unfair on the candidate, and I think it's unfair on the project. We stopped him, and he would have maybe said something that has blown us off our feet. I don't know. But I think you're handling the project with due respect quite well. And unfortunately, it's sometimes a bit, you need to apply some patience. Thank you.
Well, let me put it this way to you.
Yeah.
I'm part of the original genuine members of MK. I'm sure that answers your question. Now let's do this. I do not want to intervene, as I said, when they speak, because I may intervene when it is this candidate and stop them, try to redirect them. But next candidate, because I believe that they are going somewhere, and in fact their answers are explaining to us what kind of candidate they are, long-winded as they are, and I do not intervene. You know, there'll be a disjuncture there. It would be like, you know, I favor this candidate, I don't favor that other candidate. So can we be a little bit patient, but we will see how it pans out, because when they really completely get off the rails, I can say to them, but the question was the following. That's trying to redirect them when I do that. Honorable Stede, you had your hand up, and so says Ms. Swan.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Until, you know, whether the person is an MK or SANDF doesn't matter to me. It's not applicable to this interview for the IGI. So I've got no interest in his background, where he belongs, where he was, when he was in exile. That's got nothing to do with it. What's relevant is what we need to see if he can do this job. That's all that I'm concerned.
But again, I cannot say to him, no, that does not matter to us. Like, I can't. We must be as open as possible to allow them to say what they say. Because in their mind, they may think that it is advantageous to me to say this. And whereas at times, I mean, we may believe that it is fortuitous to say, I am related to any person, maybe a very important, I am related to judge so-and-so. We would know it is fortuitous. Or I worked with judge so-and-so. That is fortuitous. But let's ask questions to drive to the candidate's mind that what they said was fortuitous. Without us saying that and saying, no, we don't want to hear
about you belonging to this or the other thing. Ms. Wan?
Chairperson, I would like to suggest that maybe us as members ask short questions so that we can be able to say to you, no, he's not answering what I was asking. Because to say to my store, because we're in a very critical moment of the meeting. The media, even them, they can interpret that negatively when they are reporting. Thank you.
No, let's not belabor this thing. Fact of the matter is, I have not heard any one of you asking long-winded questions. Questions from the honorable members have been straight and to the point. So let's do it as we have been doing. I'll see, as I say, if there is a way of redirecting a candidate as they respond. Okay? Can we call in the next one, and at the end of this candidate, when we finish with the candidate, we shall adjourn for a quick lunch. Right? Okay. Good morning, sir. Can you remind us who you are?
My name is Andile Barnabas Kilisi. Kilisi.
I suggest that you bring your mic closer to you so that we can hear you.
Can you hear me, sir?
Yeah.
Sorry, sir. My name is Andile Barnabas, my second name. My last name is Kilisile.
Right. Just tell us, in a very, very few words, who you are. Just explain to the members of the committee who you are. We can't hear you. We can't hear you. You have a very soft voice.
Is it fine now? My name is Angela.
No, you were saying something about water.
No, I was just asking if it's possible just to take a quench of water, because I was saying to Ms. Bukhari that I've not been so terrified in my entire life after the first candidate.
You have done what?
Oh, terrified, and anxious.
Why did you have a chat with the last person?
No. The issue we were waiting, but we were just counting the minutes that he's been in the session, and we were a bit scared as to who is going to be the next cow going to slaughterhouse.
Okay, just give us a summary of who you are.
Summary, it's brief, and I'll try and be brief. Undergrad studies at UCT, LSD, VET, and thereafter I joined the then South African Secret Service, worked briefly as an operational officer dealing with issues of vehicle smuggling. Thereafter I moved to investigator, where there we were called the counterintelligence officers involved in the East Horn of Africa and Ireland, and then moved to compliance and legal counsel at the State Secret Services under the tutelage of Mr. Dennis then. I then joined the National Intelligence Agency from October 2008 to 31st Jan and in 1995. Well, there it is. You know that we are looking for a person who must be the Inspector General of Intelligence. These members are going to be asking you questions. I also want to ask you a question on the basis of how intimidated you were as you came in to a point that your throat went completely dry. What would happen in the event there was a huge intelligence scandal that you were supposed to investigate as an Inspector General of Intelligence, and you were summoned by the sitting president at the time to come and explain a report you would have submitted to him, and when you get there you find that there are a number of other people, so it's a long queue of people who have come to see the president, including a minister of state security at the time with his people. Would you be terrified at getting in finally to see the president?
Chair, I wouldn't be terrified, but the issue that I would like to place on record here was that we were just counting and out of just not trying to underestimate, nor try to dehumanize the importance of this person. It's just like we just did that as we were just chatting with one of the candidates. But hey, Mr. Davids, I think it's getting a grilling. It was just something that is said honestly, without any malice.
Honorable Stephen. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Kibisele, I see that you've been working within the intelligence community since 2005 up till January 2015. Then you left it. And you are now trying to get back within the intelligence community. What was your decision to leave the intelligence community for a job in the private sector?
I had a 10-year stint there. I left, resigned, I think, say, 1st January 2015. But my interest was to go to practice. And my interest was going to the Johannesburg Bar and to enroll myself for the pupillage of 2017, and that was the core and main reason for me leaving. But now my application at the Johannesburg Bar this year was rejected, but rejected to reason that are not known to me, and I didn't want to pursue it and ask them the reason as to why my application was then rejected. But I've also made it clear to myself that I will pursue practice and in the near future, because I've managed just to solicit some few points from my mentor, who said to me, Andile, you can still try it next year. You're still young. My fellow brother, but my aim was to go and pursue legal practice and preferably at the Johannesburg Bar. Alternatively, okay, but my first priority was to go to the Johannesburg Bar. That was the main reason and the chief reason for me leaving the agency. Even though I've left the agency, nonetheless, and I still interact and engage with the members and on issues of legal framework nonetheless. Thank you. In the event you are appointed as Inspector General of Intelligence, and towards the end of the year, you receive a call that indicates that you will be admitted for your pupillage next year, what will you do? Just a point of clarity and correction, Mr. Chair. My application at the Johannesburg Bar was rejected, and there were no reason that were provided by the chairperson of the bar as to why was I not accepted for privilege for 2017. Thanks, Chair. And it relates to how humans work. Suppose there's a change of heart, and at the beginning of next year you are admitted for privilege. That's my question. What will you do? And Chair, where I come from, if you were meeting at 1 o'clock with a source, and the source decides otherwise not to pitch, you abort the meeting, and you then initiate a follow-up meeting going forward. To answer you directly, the issue is if they decide that they've got a change of heart, I'll just have to defer and postpone my privilege, because I'm currently 42 years old and I can still join the practice probably at a later stage. the parties will be followed by Schmidt and we'll go to Manier Darso, and we will then go to Sifako and Wana. We have a new member here called Quarano. Did I hear Quarano? Manier Sunewald will be next after Mr. Smith.
Two questions that I want to pose to you. In terms of the legislation, an inspector general is supposed to submit reports to the minister responsible and provided that the president designated function to the IGI, and the IGI shall report to the president. So which possible functions does the legislation empower the president to designate to the IGI? The second question to you is, give us your conceptualization or understanding of what constitutes, in terms of perspective, national interest, because we view this position as an important position in office. What is national interest in your view and understanding?
Okay. I want to start with the latter one. It's one issue that I've flagged at the Intelligence Academy during my 5 year stint there as a trainer and a facilitator. That from the list of legislation that we have in this country, and there's one point that it seems to be tiptoeing in terms of getting the actual definition of the phrase national interest. So currently, my understanding of national interest, without any authority from the legislation or any case law, national interest means the interest of the country, that's number one, and also the interest of the country would be technology, would be issues of science, and would be issues of inventories or discoveries. because I also battled with this phrase, because it seems to be a discourse and a narrative from all people, but I'm still trying to get the actual definition of this, because I mean, I can't recall getting a definition of this from any of the 2000 and odd of the legislation, because two things that have been defined are public interest, but national interest, I still had to see it. But my understanding of it is quite brief. It's just the core values of the country, that's my understanding, and the protection and the preservation that also ensue from the word, from the phrase national interest. But now the second part is to where does the mandate derive when the president tasks the IG. I think it's derived from the section 7 of the Intelligence Services Oversight Act that says that the IG may also be designated by the president if he sees fit that there are complaints or investigation that needs his or her special attention. And once you get tasked by any of the regulators or stakeholders, you also have to provide report accordingly to the person that has tasked you, and also make carbon copies to this forum. That's my understanding, the JSCI and the responsible minister in that order. That's my understanding. Mr. Turner, you are left, or Mr. Smith, followed by Mr. Funeral.
Thank you, sir. I find it curious that on a light-hearted note that you're terrified by us. We're normally terrified by the candidate, so just to make you relax. But can I ask just three issues? The one is, I understand that you may have a default or a default judgment against your name. Could you just clarify that for the rule? The amount of 6,830. With it, do you have any previous conviction for any offences? Then, you may have been asked this question, but I would just like to find out, just to raise this concern of mine. You seem to have been the National NIA Divisional Head for Policy Standards and Compliance, the Office of the General Manager, from October 2008 to January 2015, which is quite a senior role. And I find your position which you currently hold, Secretary and Member responsible for the discipline at the School Management Forum at Den Austin High School, totally at odds with your career, totally at odds. I hope to see the link or the step or the reason. I know you said that you were applying to be admitted as a pupil for 2017, but this is in January 2015. It is just too unrelated. I'm trying to work it out. Maybe you've got an answer to this. We can understand why from January 2015 you received a new appointment in April 2016 to date, which has got to do with school management. Then, just as a matter of final analogy, from my point of view, according to section 77B of the Intelligence Oversight Act, the function of the IGI is to submit reports to the committee. And in terms of 778, it is to submit reports to every minister responsible for his service, provided with a present designated function to the IGI. The IGI shall report to the president. Now, my question is, what is your understanding whether such a report must also be referred to the committee after presenting a report to the president and the relevant minister? Or would you be of the view that referring a report to the president and the minister would not be then it would not be legally bound to order a fair report to the JEC. Which is this committee, which in terms of legislation, which the Honourable Chairman normally starts off with saying, is that you're basically accountable to the JACI, legally, Section 70. So just with that, I'd like to answer. Thank you.
Let's start with the issue of the default judgment. This, of course, it is a default judgment because I had a very trying life, I think 2009 to 2011, when my spouse was retrenched, and we were only getting one salary, and that is a fact indeed, and I'm not going to dispute it, and that I had an account with Woolworths, which we are also sharing with my wife, and things were quite tough, and it was tough, we couldn't honor this this account because we had some not financial mandate. It was an issue of we had to cut because we had two vehicles, and one vehicle was also sold back to the garage, and to try and meet the daily necessities, and this default judgment ensued during those hard times and hard and pressed times, and this is a fact, and we've managed, and myself and my wife to recoup, and because my wife is currently working. And I'm currently a stay-at-home dad, which I also explained in my second half and follow-up question. But this is a fact, and I'm not going to say any more further things about this default judgment. But indeed, it was tough, and it was tough. But now, coming back to your second question, sir. And NIA, and then work at the school as the secretary for the governing body, and also a member responsible for discipline. Currently, what I'm doing, I'm doing some community work, and I don't get paid doing it, and it's just an appreciation of what has also been done to me. By my intelligence services, because then I was paid, and they needed this kind of expertise, and I volunteered, and I assist them at no cost to them, and I'm also helping them with the drafting of the policy, and also with the chairing of the disciplinary hearing. What I also do as well, and that. I also volunteer my services at Vets Disability Unit, which I didn't put on my CV deliberately, and go there once a week. And I also do some voluntary work as well at the Tembisa Hospital, Academic Hospital, and doing some missionary work. And it's not a sign of boredom, but I would like also just to play a part in community awareness to those that are also less fortunate. And my aim is to do this for up until the probably early January for my second year, and I will pursue my other endeavors. But this is part of my say thank you to those that have also assisted me to where I am. And it shouldn't be strange. But this is what I've tried to do, and yeah. And then last point, even though I might be tasked to compile a report by the president or the responsible minister, but I'm also compelled and obligated by the legislation to also report to this fora for all of my workings and daily activities. It's an obligatory, and it's also a compelling that
I'll also see it fit, and also appraise this committee with all my activities and affairs that I do, be it a tasking from the president or a tasking from the responsible minister. Thank you.
Sorry, your previous convictions are done in that on record?
So,
whether you had previous convictions, see, you shake your head, but it doesn't record the audio version there. The question whether you had previous convictions for offences.
No, I don't have any convictions for any offence, except to place it on record the issue for default judgment. Thank you. You find a declaratory form from the committee, and in view of your response to the first question by the Honourable Smith, what is your view of the following question? Are there any unsatisfied civil judgments against you? And you have said no. Can you explain that?
I said no because my understanding was this happened, I think, in 2006, if I remember, says no. And I've also printed a copy of my financial records, so I thought at least I should also be cleared in terms of these issues, and there was no any of those default judgments from the list that I've done, and hence I said no, because I mean, I don't think that to me was raised by the financial institution.
And in view of your answer, you did not think it necessary to indicate, just giving yourself an explanation that once upon a time I had this against me, but it has since been redeemed. You didn't think it was necessary?
No, Chair, because my understanding is when I still interact with the members. I mean, I also asked them if there was any default judgment and against my name, and I mean, I was given assurance that as of today there's just nothing. But now the form didn't say to me if probably I had a previous judgment that I would also like to raise with the forum. It says just yes or no.
Next person, Manyas Kunebhand, who is going to be followed by Ms. Wana, I mean by Ms. Kosan.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Ms. Wana.
Sir, I've got two questions for you. The first one is also about Section 7, and that is 7.7b. Refers to the review of the intelligence and counterintelligence activities of any services. And then the question is, what is your understanding of the review of the activities of any services, and which services would be included in any service? That's my first question. And then the second question, Chairperson, is about if you become the IG, I want to know, what will be your management style, and B, how are you going to deal with challenges? Thank you.
And the first question, review of the services. The review of the services in terms of this act would be those intelligence services of the defense, that's number one, crime intelligence and National Intelligence Agency and the South African Secret Service respectively, and that would be those point of focus for the reviewing of their activities and affairs. In terms of the
the management style, because I'm guided by three things, and which would be my value proposition if I appointed as the IG. One shift for me would be if I'm appointed, I would like to contribute, that's number one, foster and respect the rule of law. That to me, it's the cornerstone. That would also be my, how I would like to be remembered for this office. Number two, I would also ensure that I instill and inspire ethical leadership. You know, ethical leadership in the sense that I want to be a leader that instill and inspire mutual respect and trust. Secondly, I want to be a leader under the ethical leadership, a leader that prioritizes transparency means, and also to conduct myself with integrity. The last part on my style will be to also instill and inspire corporate governance. Corporate governance, which is three-phase accountability, responsible reporting, and transparency. Those would be my three value propositions, which I would couch them as would be my style, that I would be remembered for if I had to be appointed and assume this position. Those would be my three cultural shifts as opposed to the management side, but those are the three things that I would like to deal with challenges. Challenges happen in all our daily activities, and for me will be to really again address it as soon as possible, and not drag it or defy it, because I mean it's not going to disappear, but to deal with it fairly and justly and equitably, really. But there's no recipe for this. It's just preparation and learning from your mistakes, and also being diligent, really. There's just no recipe for this. But yeah, this is how we deal with it, address it and arrest it immediately, and also ventilate those issues at hand, and also hear the other side of the story, and make an informed decision thereafter. And yeah, I mean, really, there's just no a recipe for this. Yeah, thanks, Chair.
Honorable Skosana, followed by Honorable Wana, Honorable Kwebekulu, Honorable Gamede. That will be the last, the end of the list. Okay?
Thank you, Chapasan. Mr. Tricelli, good day. As you have outlined your management style, could you please outline your monitoring mechanism on your human resource if you are appointed as an IGR in the office? Two, Section 7 of the Constitution states that the report of an IGI submitted in terms of Section 7, subsection 7, paragraph F, in respect of monitoring and reviewing shall contain the findings and recommendations of the IGI. One, are the ministers and or the sages is legally bound to resolve the issues and fulfill the recommendations mentioned in the report of the IGI? If not, what are the purpose of the report submitted to resolve the issues and fulfill the report submitted, if not, I say section seven states that the report of the IG I submitted in terms of section 7, subsection 7, paragraph F, in respect of monitoring and reviewing shall contain the findings and recommendations of the IGI. Are the ministers and or the scientists legally bound to resolve the issues and fulfill the recommendations mentioned in the report of the IGI? If not, what are the purposes of the report submitted in terms of section 7, subsection 7, paragraph F? Thank you.
I was praying very hard that this won't be raised with me, but I guess I'll have to answer it. The reports of the IG, with the recommendations, with the findings, and you know, they are advisory. I want to stress the word. They are advisory, but the prerogative and the power and discretion resides with the responsible minister or ministers and the accounting officers. And this is in terms of the law, because in the case of President of the Republic and I think in Manning Singh regarding the conferment of the Sikh status, Justice Ngabinda said that the president will also have to derive or solicit his prerogative or discretion either from the constitution or from the law. Application of that case to here would be this: there is no provision in the Oversight Act that says that the IG's recommendations of finding should be binding to any of those responsible ministers or DG, and that is a fact. And his or her findings are merely advisory, but the discretion resides with the responsible minister whether to take them through. But now that prerogative is optional. I must underline the word, it's optional, because the findings are advisory in nature. Number two, monitoring mechanism. You know, I don't know, but I don't want if me appointed to be boxed with HR issues, you know? Because HR issue, for me, if appointed, it's not the core for the office, you know? Because there are serious issues that need the attention of the IG, but not by any chance trying to undervalue or underestimate the HR. But monitoring of HR would be that all the appointments are subject to the confirmation by the minister. And we can advertise a post and And provided you do have budget in it, we are going to just do as we please. We also need to be frugal and also be prudent of the resources at hand. But now if I'm given a 100 rand for me to fill the vacancies, and I must make sure that at least those vacancies are also included to that 100 rand that I've been allocated for. And I can't do anything beyond that. And remember, I must be able to account for each and every cent, be it the HR, be it the operational tool, and I would have to account for that. Because then the buck starts and stop with the IG, irrespective whether it's an HR or an ops matter. But monitoring to me, you would have to do it. If daily, so be it. Weekly, so be it. And also account for it as well. Because then that to me is the core for the office.
I just want to understand something that you have said. I understood you to be saying that reports that you submit to the relevant minister advisory. In other words, you bring your report, you have done an investigation of what you call the core functions of the Office of the Inspector General, an investigation of a serious matter, and you say after you have submitted to the minister, that you have done your work and you walk away from that. Do I understand you to be saying that? Because if that is what you are saying you will never fight for any of your reports. In other words, you would not even come to this committee and say, at this time, I submitted the following report to the relevant minister with the following recommendations. And as far as I'm concerned, this is very urgent and it's serious. Therefore, the minister is not responding to this. Is it possible for the committee to assist you so that this matter is handled properly? You are saying you are done when you submit that report. The matter is advisory, and if the minister does nothing about it, that's his call or her call. Do I understand you to be saying that?
I just want to place this on record so that I'm not quoted out of context. I'll give you an example of a surveillance. Alright? Let's say Argus newspaper journalist complain to the chairperson of the JSCI or alternatively to the minister that the spooks or the spies are surveilling him or her, right? And that report is then channeled to the IG for intervention. My understanding of my function is to investigate and ascertain the veracity of such call, right? Because surveillance are done by the spies and the spooks, but there's also law that they also have to comply with. So in this case, the issue is this: the Attorney General, alright, approved that surveillance. That's number one. So I mean, a surveillance operation, they need to be approved by Section 252 of the Criminal Procedure Act 51 of 1977, and there are also guidelines thereof whereby the spies will have to conform with. Let's say the surveillance was not approved by the Attorney General as per the Act. But now in my report, I will also have to appraise the minister concerned. Alternatively, this for us, that this is what I found in respect of an Argus journalist that was surveilled by an NIA for argument's sake, that the surveillance concern was not ratified by the Criminal Procedure Act as per the provision of the Act, and such surveillance was also illegal. Then my lesson would be to do those findings and advise you accordingly. But now, where I'm sitting, I cannot coerce or harass you to agree with me, because I mean, the discretion and the prerogative to sustain that finding or recommendation resides with you or the responsible minister. That's my understanding of my function. I would have to advise and bring forth findings if they've been caught outside of the ambit of the law. I would have to advise accordingly and also provide either the minister or the JCI with those provisions of the Act that have been flouted. That's my understanding of the role of the IG. But I mean, I cannot say they haven't flouted if they haven't flouted. If they have flouted, I would have to appraise the JSCI with those provisions of the Act that have been flouted. But the discretion and the prerogative to action that finding report doesn't reside with the IG. It resides with the responsible minister of the JSCI to take those findings forward. That's my understanding.
In other words, there would not even be a follow-up on your office whether what was done with this report and that report. And I'm not talking about small things here. This committee has seen, reports that relate to big things. You mean, therefore, that when you shall have submitted that report, you wouldn't go for a follow-up. It's it, and whatever the minister does with it, that's fine by you. Is that what you're saying?
Chair, I've seen it all, but again...
No, if you believe you've answered it, let's leave it there.
No, but I think I've attempted to answer it that I would have to advise the committee or the responsible minister. If there are follow-ups that will have to be chalked by me, I'll definitely have to avail myself for such cause. But my role is really advisory. But if there are follow-ups, I am available to for such follow-ups. And if there are gaps that the JSCI might have picked or the minister, I'm still available to cure those for those defects. And it doesn't mean that I'm just going to drop the findings and then I hibernate. No. I'm still available for any follow-ups, for any gaps, for any guidance or direction to take the process forward. Thanks, sir.
Wada Gamede in Kuneku.
Thank you, Sir President. I've got two questions, Sir President. One is as follows. As the Section 7.7 paragraph presented that the IG must submit certificate to the relevant minister, my question is, what are your understanding of the purpose of and the functions of the certificate, and whether the different services are bound to address the issues which are dealt by in the certificate? That's question number one. Question number two, I thought Andile will lead the institution differently. It was as an IGI. There's another staff. My question is, what tools of analysis have you got when you find that there's an infiltration between the foreign intelligence and the national intelligence inside? Thank you.
I'll start with the first one. Second one. No, I'll start with the second one. Please bear with me, ma'am. Infiltration. infiltration, I'll definitely deal with it because, especially in that office, you need people that are credible and that you can also trust and also have integrity. If I'm appointed today, the first thing first that I would do will be to shorten the riveting of that office, as opposed to the 5 years for the top secret, and I would bring it to at least year to year, because there you need people that you can trust, because that office deals with serious issues, serious and quite sensitive. That would be the first part that I would do, and also to do the issues of the disclosure of interest, and even though that's done yearly, and I'll also try and shorten the process just to try and avert the issues of them being susceptible and also be prone to blackmail. But vetting will be my first issue that I'll deal with, to cut the 5 to a year, and also do the audits on finances. Because I mean, espionage is one of the said security risks that this country is facing, apart from cyber security. But this will be the key that I'll do. And I'll also make sure that I'll do the lifestyle audit for the members in that office. Coming back to your first question, the certificate. A certificate is to monitor and ensure compliance of the intelligence services, that they complied with, number one, with the Constitution of the Republic, and also with the applicable legislation, and also customary international law, and also the international agreements that are also binding to the country. It's the key because we're in a scenario whereby people will be denied clearance because of financial maladies, whereby I've also quite caucus that this should be relooked, because you've got an act currently that also affords people to be placed under debt review or debt administration if they are indeed encountering financial problems. But you can have a scenario whereby the agency decides to deny clearance to a person who is currently facing financial problems. But for me, the certificate is just to monitor and ensure compliance. But again, the issue of the standing of those certificates, in terms of the Act, whether they are binding, I do not. I'm not sure, ma'am, if they are binding. But my understanding is that they will just have to issue to various agencies if they are complying with their mandate in terms of the legislation. And the binding of those certificates, I haven't appraised myself with that, and I would not like to expand further on that, yeah.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, Mr. Kibbe, Good day. I'm impressed by your introduction by saying you are a stay-home dad. That was a nice phraseology to indicate that you are not placed anywhere economically. Now, you resigned on the 31st of January from your last job, being a divisional head, purely because we have put in an application for privilege, Major Inspector. Was that really a sound decision? That you just put an application without a response, and you just resign, or you resign because there were other reasons other than that. Second issue is that you started working in 1997, according to documents in front of us, and the FCOCD. To me, I see that in most of the jobs, you went for 2 months, 6 months, 8 months, 12 months. The longest you have served is in your last job where you've done 7 years, from 2008 to 2015. But with the rest, mostly Hazelia. Why would you be job hopping? You joined with us leading intelligence community in May 2004, according to your CV. And the last job before that, when you resigned, was in November 2003. That was your last job before you joined the intelligence community. So where were you between that November 2003 and April 2004, when you started in May 2004 in the intelligence community? Thanks.
I would like to rebut any construe of myself being construed as a job hopper. I'm not a job hopper. Let me just explain the misunderstanding there, Mr. Chair. While studying at UCT, I think from 1996 to I think 1999. Before that, I was a kitchen boy at a place called here 18 Kilom Street. It used to be a hotel, and in a bob job there, you know, in preparing of my U at the university. I worked here, I think, for about a month or two. And then I went to UCT. I did my undergrad there. But now, while at UCT, I was a research assistant for TESA, NASA, doing a research. And it was a contract while studying. And I was under Nadia Hartman was my supervisor there doing the investigations on NEFSIS for TEPSA. Also at UCT, I was also a research assistant for a book of Dr. Kashula Russell, who is currently at Rhodes University. I was doing a research for him in preparation of his book while studying at UCT. My last work stint at UCT, I was also a staff warden. Before House Committee member. I was also a subordinate, and I was appointed there from Feb until December. And December, I was also a vacation assistant because where I come from, things were not well financially, and that's a fact. I had to work because my mom couldn't have afforded to enroll in a GCT, and that is a fact. My mom was a housekeeper, my father was a janitor, and that's a fact, and I would like to bring forth to this committee. And I went to UWITS to do an LLB degree at WITS. I was also a health committee for treasure, and it was tough. And because my nurses at WITS was only confessed to me, I think, in April, and my mom got retrenched in 1999. It was quite tough. Honorable committee, very tough indeed, but I soldier on, and I finished my LLB, and once I finished my LLB, I think 2003 to April 2004, still recall, I was unemployed for 4 months. I had an offer at the Supreme Court of Appeal as a research assistant. And I was confirmed to work there, and the NIA also came on board on the same similar period, and I had to decide whether to go to the Supreme Court of Appeal as a research assistant for a contract of 2 years or work at the NIA. And I was not missing in action. I was here. But I had to assume my duties with the NIA because I still remember my interview at Bloemfontein, chaired by Justice Lex from Party, and they paid for my transport to go to and fro with the Greyhound bus. I still remember, but it was the start of the new beginning. And just to clarify some few stuff with you, Mr. Kamete, I was not missing in action. I was here, but it was quite challenging, to say the least.
I appreciate that, but it's recorded here as places where he has worked. In the city, he has worked here. So it didn't show that he was in a school and doing some work, but it's a recorded as a work experience.
Well, that's not a question. He's explaining why he was asking the question, because it is not clear from reading the CV. And Amizita?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon.
There's an outstanding. Whether
indeed I have resigned to fully pursue my interest in practice. I don't know if my resignation notice could also be shared with this fora, because I served 3 months notice with the agency because I was never fitted, but the aim was really to go to practice, and that was the aim, and nothing more. That was the aim, and in my resignation note, and the DG then said that, Andre, are you really sure you want to leave? And I said, of course, and I want to leave, but But that was my aim, and it's still my aspiration and goal to pursue the legal profession, because that's my goal, and I'm pleased now with nature for being emotional with this, and but I love the agency because they've played a significant role in my life, and even my resignation note, and they just couldn't believe it that I had to leave just to pursue for that. Thanks, Chair. Follow up on the
question.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Chair.
I just want to know, whether after getting the letter declining you from the bar, have you ever reapplied back to the agency for assuming you are saying you are unemployed? And number two, I want to be honest, I really do not get the reason for you to leave. Is there anything that you are not telling us that we should know? The cause of your resigning? If I can make this brief example for you. Chair, I was working for the Road Accident Fund for 5 years. But after 5 years, I realized that I want to go back to the legal profession. I started engaging the legal firms outside. Then on the day when I was sure that I would be working for this firm, this is benefiting everything. It's only then I tendered my resignation with the RAF to say on a certain date I'm starting in a certain office. Now I'm trying to get a sense of you applying to the bar and then you resign at the same time. What is there anything that you should know that caused you to leave the agency? Because I'm not convinced that was the reason. I'm sorry. Thanks.
I don't know. What else can I say? Because a bar, you will apply a year earlier. You know? And a privilege, it's for the whole year. And you don't get paid for it. You know? Practice is a calling. You know? And if I remember well in my matric, and Mr. Brown, my teacher then, you know, he said to me, you must pursue this, because those are my ambitions, not only started in 2015. You know, those were my long goals, because currently, when you look at the senior counselors in this country, I mean, you can count them, you know, there are hardly 50, you know, talking about people from the historical disadvantage. And that's a fact. And most of those that are currently senior counselors, age-wise, it's 50 and above. And the issue for me was who's going to replace them when they go. And I can assure you, without any fear of contradiction, that was the only. Only there's no other way, and I promise you, I mean, I'm not on social media, and I'm not being currently handled, and but my reputation speaks for itself, and the agency has also entrusted me with sensitive ops that I've also undertook to the best of my ability. And during my stint at the agency, I've never been called wanting. And I've played a serious act of reputation and honor and dignity, the Constitution and the law. And if there are doubts or reasons of suspicion that I might have left for any other means, Oh, bear with me, Honorable Mother, I don't have any. And bear with me, I do not have any. And people that are in my friend circle, they will tell you, I just do not have. And I didn't go to the agency by default. It was an issue of a talented spotting. And that's it. I don't have any other adjustments to raise on this matter. But please bear with me if your reasonable suspicion has not yet evaporated. But please, my open mind, bear with me. I just do not have. Thank you.
But have you reapplied now that you are unemployed?
Now that I'm...
sorry. Please, Honorable Members, let us not pursue this. His answer is, there's nothing underhanded in his leaving the service, and secondly, that he was following, you know, an aspiration to make a contribution towards the legal practice in this country. Can we step off this, please? And Honorable Kwebekulu?
Thank you, Chairperson, once more. Good afternoon, Mr. My question is as follows. Our country has been facing, or is still facing, a lot of protests which end up in disruptive behaviors. If you happen to be nominated or appointed to lead the IGI, how would you handle these situations? Thank you, Chair.
I'll be quite frank and honest with you. There is a passage in the Bible, and I would like to quote it so that you can also understand my frustration on these matters as well. I think it says, if the sentence for crime is not carried out quickly, people's hearts are filled with schemes to do the wrong thing. I mean, what we're seeing on social media, on television, it's uncalled for, you know? You've got students poking at staff members, you know, insulting. And then you said, where are we going with this? And those are issues. They get paid, 1,000, they are out, and they continue with the spree. And for me, I can only appraise the NTA just to advise them, just to, you know, to intensify this bailed things, conditions. I mean, 1,000, then off you go. You do the same thing. They're destroying, and we don't have money. And there's just no discipline. And I mean, my role is just to bring the awareness of the importance of property. And if you do feel aggrieved by any how means, please address those with your ward councillor or probably a chief, where there is a chief or induna or a traditional leader in that sphere of terrain. And so that could also be escalated to COCTA. But I mean, the only thing we need at this stage is just awareness and also discourage people from destroying the properties. Because to destroy the property is going to cost us dearly, and money is not there. So does this move? But for me, I can only appraise by doing the awareness to those that are currently involved with such destructions, really. And I can't do much. Just to bring forth awareness and try to also discourage them from destroying the property. Because it's going to cost very good. Thanks, sir. Would you say that the biblical passage you have quoted has relevance to the work of the Inspector General of Intelligence? I'm quoting it because they are saying that fortunately, like you have banned a school in Malawi.
No.
Stick to my question, please. Do you think that passage is relevant to the work of the Inspector General of Intelligence? Let's just confine ourselves to the work of the Inspector General of Intelligence.
No, it was just a response to the Honorable Kaluku.
Okay, let me put it this way. The crime that has been committed, and that biblical passage says, handling of that crime must be expeditious. That is what that passage says. There are crimes which will be submitted to you for investigation. And I suspect, therefore, that you would want to follow that biblical passage of quick investigation and dealing with that crime committed. I'm asking the question in that context. Does that passage therefore have relevance to the work of the Inspector General of Intelligence?
No, but again, if it was an issue of a crime complaint, I would have to once again advise and of course I would not have to quote this, but just to show the relevance of crime not carrying out too quickly and the consequences thereof. But for me, in this case, it is relevant, especially the questions you have just raised, the relevance of that passage that I've just quoted.
Okay, is there anything in your final statement to the committee before we adjourn?
I'd like just to tender my sincere apologies if might have been emotional regarding the issue of the bar, and if by any chance I might have probably offended any of the members during my reply, and I'd like just to. And my sincere apologies to those members that might have felt offended by my response or reply, and nothing else here today.
Thank you very much. I didn't pick up from the honourable members any indication, not even body language, that indicated that there was a feeling you were emotional. I didn't see that. Among the members, so don't worry about that aspect. But I do want also to express our appreciation that you made yourself available for the interaction that has happened. And on that note, honourable members and everybody else, there's food outside. It's not a lot of it. And if there is someone among you who is highly religious, can that person please just stand up, pray to God, and say that the money that he made available those centuries ago to others who were as hungry as we are should be multiplied so that it is more than that money. If there's someone who feels that they can make that kind of prayer and it works. Not unless there's nobody who can do that.
I'm ready.
Okay, let's go and eat then.